The following is a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its owners, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.
Money Talks, the show that gives you the tools to navigate a challenging economy, help you build and protect your wealth, and provide timely news and information to manage your money. Here's the host of Money Talks, Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group on 1590 WAKR.
And good morning, everyone. I am your host, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. This is Money Talks, and thanks for joining us on this. Looks like a nice sunny Saturday morning, the fourth day of March, as we quickly try to get rid of and get through this winter. As we take a look at the markets that squeaked out a gain yesterday after being negative most of the day, the Dow ended up just under 3 points to 21,005. The NASDAQ was up just under 10 points, closed at 5870, and the S&P 500 also joined in, up a little over a point to close at 2383. Looking at the other markets, natural gas was up 2 cents to close at $2.82. Oil, the West Texas Intermediate, was up 72 cents, closed at $53.33 a barrel, while the Brent crude was up 82 cents, closed at $55.90 a barrel. They have been trading in this very narrow range here for a while, but we did see gas futures go up this past week, and they closed up another penny yesterday to $1.65. That's why we're seeing the price at the pumps go up in the area anywhere from $2.04 to $2.35 for a gallon of regular unleaded. Gold was up 56 cents, close to $1,234.81 an ounce, while silver was up 20 cents, closed at $17.97. The VIX, the volatility index measure, was down 85 cents, closed under 11 at $10.96. And in the bond market, we see the 2-year now sits at 1.31%, the 10-year at 2.48%, and the 30-year at 3.07%. We saw initial jobless claims this week dropped for 19,000 to a level of 223,000. Basically, with this fall, we see that they're at their lowest level since hitting 222,000 in the week ending March the 31st, 1973. Markets also digesting an increase in expectations that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates this month in their next monetary policy meeting. Basically, the Wall Street has it at a 77.5% probability that they're going to raise rates by a quarter of a percent this month. We saw that the ISM Purchasing Managers Index climbed to 57.7 in February from 56 in January. A reading above 50 indicates growth in the manufacturing sector. We also saw that the GDP, the gross domestic product, increased by the 1.9% in the fourth quarter. That is unrevised from the previous estimate. Economists had been expecting the pace of growth to be upwardly revised to 2.1%. Conference Board also said its consumer confidence index climbed to 114.8 in February after falling to a revised 111.6 in January. Basically, the 114 is the highest reading since a 116.3 reading in July of 2001. So certainly confidence is gaining ground out there as people look at what's going on in the country and in Washington. Guess I want to start this week by looking at exactly what's going on out there in the markets. Of course, things have been pretty good since the election. We basically saw a move upward for about 3 or 4 weeks there after the election. Saw some stalling out there where it was basically trading in a very narrow range for about the next month, and saw another leg up since then. And basically, where is the market as far as fundamental pricing at this point? If we look historically, the P&E, the price-to-earnings multiple for the stock market, should be somewhere around 16, 16.5. Currently, we're around 18, 18.5. So the market as it sits is a little overpriced at this point, but it has anticipation of, you know, many of the projects and changes, looking at corporate tax change, individual tax change, repatriation of corporate dollars from overseas, looking at the Affordable Health Care Act, infrastructure project, and the list goes on. And so that's why the markets have been the animal spirits, in a very positive mood out there. Now, certainly, I think as we're starting to see, certainly with the infighting and arguing, let's say, in Washington, that all they're doing is slowing things down. This has always been an amazement of me. We elect these officials to go to Washington and represent us. And when they go to Washington, all of a sudden, they become very selfish, power-hungry individuals who are only concerned about staying in Washington and protecting their own party instead of what's best for the American people. I just find that always to be very frustrating and very selfish on the parts of the elected politicians. They're there to represent and do what's best for America, not elected to go to Washington and to hang on to that position and power as a career move and do whatever it takes to stay in that position. Because certainly what I'm seeing is it's an utter disgrace of right now of what the Democrats are doing with the Republicans, holding up cabinet moves and so forth, and then blaming. You're not getting anything done. How can we get anything done? You're not giving us the people to fill our cabinet positions like we're supposed to. And it goes on and on. And it's not just, you know, a one-time thing with the Democrats and the Republicans. This has been going on for years. But, you know, drain the swamp. I want to use that term because it is so appropriate. I like to get everybody out of there. Just take them all out. Term limits, you get one term. Put them in office. Do what's best for America. But let's go on. My point here is we're expecting some sort of pause, some sort of pullback in the markets here. They've gone a little far, a little fast. We're a little overpriced. And as we start to settle down and see reality in the way that Washington just wants to slog along and move very slowly, are we going to get the tax reform as promised by Mr. Cohen in August? You know, I don't know. Certainly things are moving a little bit slower than we'd like them to move. And when you see that, the markets get a little frustrated, and certainly we need price adjustments in the market. And so I'm anticipating that sometime here in the very near future, we're going to see a little bit of a pullback in the markets. Nothing to be concerned about, because the fundamental, the basic foundation of economics point that we have a pretty good recovery started here. We're starting to see some increases in corporate earnings, top lines and bottom line, and certainly we want to continue to see that. But we could easily see, 3%, 5%, 7%, 10% pullback. And there's nothing underlying that says this is a caution, things are slowing down, things are getting bad. They're actually getting better. But this is just a repricing of risk out there. It's normal, it's natural, and it's actually needed and necessary. But it comes down to, as an individual investor, should you try doing this on your own? Well, here's where I'm going to make the case, that for most people, it's very complicated. It's gotten much more complicated in the last 15 years. There's a lot of research that needs to be done, a lot of understanding of investment products, a lot of understanding of economics, a lot of understanding of what's going on in the global markets. Do you understand things like standard deviation or beta readings or alpha, or are you able to keep emotions out of your financial decisions? Do you understand technicals? Do you understand fundamentals? Do you know when to buy? Do you know when to sell? Do you know what to buy? and how much? Do you know what is good diversification? These are the questions that I pose because certainly there are individuals out there that, for example, have retired and they have now taken up a new mantra, a new banner of, I've really enjoyed the financial markets. I really want to spend more time, you know, understanding them more, researching, reading, sitting down in front of your computer and spending hours to make sure that you have more of an understanding. And these are the people that really can do this on their own if they spend the adequate amount of time to understand it. There was a joke back in the late 90s when things were going very well in the markets that all you had to do was throw a dart at a dartboard and that would pick your investment and you could make money on it. And a lot of people felt that they could self-invest and do very well at it. And for a couple of years there was probably a lot of truth into that. But when you look at this is your money that you've saved all of your life. This is what's going to take you through your golden years, your retirement. That's got to last, you know, 20, 25, 30, 40 years. It depends on longevity. Do you want to leave that to an amateur, which would be yourself if you're trying to self-invest? No, most people are going to answer, I don't want to do that. I don't want to risk it. Well, the same can be said with finding a financial professional to work with. Are you going to work with somebody, for example, that works at the bank? All they're there to do is to sell commission products to you. They're really not doing comprehensive financial planning. They're really not there to look out for your best interest. They're not working as a fiduciary for you. And so it's very important also to find somebody that's going to work as a fiduciary, meaning look out for your best interest. Somebody who understands the markets, understands the economic ramifications of investments, understands what it is that you're trying to do. I still see too many places out there that use templates. You know, okay, you're 65-year-old conservative male. This is where you should be invested. Well, what about income needs? What about your risk profiles? Are you able to sleep at night or not? If you use templates, you don't take any of those types of things into consideration. How much money do you want to leave to your heirs? Or are you going to spend most of it during your retirement? What are your plans? What are your dreams? All of these things have to be taken into consideration so that you end up with something that matches what you're trying to do with the rest of your life. And so certainly it is not only important to understand, should I do it on my own or should I hire a professional, which most are going to say I should hire a professional, but then it also comes down to I need to hire the right type of professional to handle all this money that I have worked all my life for and make sure that it's handled in a responsible way that meets your personal needs and desires. And with that, let's go ahead and take a commercial break, and we'll be right back in just a couple minutes.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590 with more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. And, you know, hopefully those of you that listen to the show on a regular basis, you get some good information out of it. That's what I try to present. I'm not here to give exact guidance and recommendations to people. That's what I do in the office, but try to share with you some feelings about the current events, give you different views and perspective on different things. And just the more information you have, the better the decisions you can make sometimes. This latest one that I have here, which is very interesting, comes from a Forbes article by Bert Doman. He writes it. He says, over the past 39 years, I have rarely used the words opportunity of a lifetime. However, I feel that there is a good chance of another one in progress. Let's look at gold since the late 1970s. History may not exactly repeat, but it often rhymes. In 1977, when my firm, Doman Capital, he says, was founded, I started the Wellington Letter, and I was correctly bullish on gold. It soared from around $120 when I recommended it to more than $800 during the next 3+ years. Then when gold dropped through $694 to the downside, I declared it a bear market. My recommendations to buy put options on many of the popular mining firms made fortunes for some of my readers. Using cycle studies, I predicted in 1981 that the bear market might last 20 years. Then it should be followed by a 30-year bull market. I said I had no idea what would cause a 30-year bull market. Now we know it's the huge creation of $21 trillion of bank credit out of thin air by the major banks. The 20-year bear market prediction turned out to be right on target as the next bull market started in 2001. I've done a lot of thinking about the precious metals and the longer-term prospects. Over a year ago, in my February 18th, 2016 issue, I wrote about the 2011 to 2015 decline possibly having been a cyclical bear market in the longer-term secular bull market. That is correct. Much higher highs are ahead. The long-term chart of gold below, and he has a chart here, goes back to the start of the secular bull market in 2001. Note that after the correction from 2011 to 2015, it has formed a bullish potential inverse head and shoulder pattern. It can closely, decisively above 1400. I would become even more bullish. He's using a technical chart in this example here to show that if it breaks out above 1400, then certainly it's going to be moving upward quite rapidly. My contrarian view on gold, he says, my view for about 40 years has been contrary to the common thinking on gold. Popular opinions are gold is a crisis hedge. I disagree, he says. It actually declined from above 800 to around 250 from 1981 to 2001, or 20 years. That period saw some incredible crises such as the Thailand default, the Russian default, the long-term management hedge fund bankruptcy that required a Federal Reserve rescue mission, among others. Number two, he says, gold is a fear hedge. He says, I disagree. They never specify the fear. Is it nuclear war, a terrorist attack, a Greek or Italian debt default? Well, none of these influence gold for the longer term. Number three, rising interest rates are bearish for gold. He says, I disagree. Actually, it's vice versa. Interest rate rise when inflation fears rise, and rising inflation is bullish for gold as it is a store of value. My view is that gold is a hedge against a loss of confidence in currency. What would trigger that? The $21 trillion of central bank credit creation of the past 7 years that has been stuck in the banks not being lent out. If something changes and banks start lending again in a normal fashion, that would be inflationary. All the additional credit would compete for goods and assets. What would cause this? One example, he says, a repeal of Dodd-Frank and loosening other regulations that have basically stopped bank lending for the average person or business. An increasing availability of credit could unleash another speculative binge in the markets and perhaps in some sectors of the economy. Additionally, price measure would come from tariffs on Chinese goods. So many products are made in China, a general tariff on Chinese imports would cause a big rise in the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. Furthermore, the administration is talking about a border adjustment tax, the BAT. It's estimated that it would lift retail prices by 9 to 10%. Consumers wouldn't like that. I personally call the BAT a VBI, a very bad idea. And finally, there is the American First agenda, which would push the cost of producing goods much higher. Companies would hike prices to make up for that. Paying workers in Mexico $8 an hour for assembling a car would go to around $40 an hour for a U.S. worker. Someone has to pay for it, and that is the consumer. because of greater availability of money, it would be like the late 1970s when rising inflation due to very easy money actually caused stocks and precious metals to be bought. Inflation soared along with interest rates, making real assets and even stocks inflation hedges. What are the inflation expectations now after years of deflation concerns? Well, he says that the chart that he has here, it shows a clear double bottom during 2016. That's bullish. However, the chart is near resistance. Yes, that's the technical analysis. Also works on economic indicators. This suggests that there will be at least a pullback or correction in inflation expectations if indeed exceptions continue higher, and we think that is likely. He basically is saying at this point, the conclusion is that investors had a chance to make big profits with his contrarian advice since the late 1970s when Wall Street expressed opposite views. Right now, he goes, I see similarities to the same market environment. Of course, I need more confirmation. The new administration is only a few weeks old. However, so far I see signs that we could see significant inflationary blow-off if the trends of the 1970s are repeated. So therefore, if he sees gold go above 1,400, it's off to the races. And so that gives you Mr. Doman's view on gold and the opportunity of a lifetime. And we'll be right back after the news. Stay with us. You're listening to Money Talks on WAKR.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And welcome back. It's time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week. And this week we have the mayor and his wife are out for a walk. And they come up to a construction site. Well, as they walk by, hello, Rebecca, yells out one of the construction workers to the mayor's wife. And the mayor's wife, well, she waves hello and returned. Stunned, the mayor asks Rebecca, how do you know that man? Well, before you and I met, I used to date him. Yeah, the mayor smirks. It's a good thing I came along or else you'd be married to a construction worker. No, ponders the wife. If I had married him, he'd be the mayor. Okay. And as we take a look, a lot of retirees, when they retire, think about moving to a much warmer climate or a different place in the world. Many people dream of fleeing to cheaper and warmer climates in their retirement, but advisors caution, however, to watch for the unexpected financial and non-financial consequences. Number one is taxes. The first thing to emphasize to people basically is the fact that they should look at this home state's income taxes. Maybe there's not income taxes. If there's not, there might be other taxes such as property, sales tax, inheritance taxes, and estate taxes. You need to know about all those. Oftentimes, there won't be state income taxes, but they're going to have to raise the revenue through another source. You need to be aware of all those taxes. Advisors have warned clients against creating more state taxable income by keeping, for example, maybe they have municipal bonds from a former resident state that would become taxable in the new resident state. Furthermore, it's critical that retirees understand the difference between domicile, where you live, and residence, where you intend to return. They go on to explain what about things like real estate expenses. The related costs can be higher than expected. In Florida, they give an example that insurance is a biggie. due to hurricanes. Homeowner premiums could be in the thousands of dollars. In fact, in a recent report from the National Association of Insurance Commissioners showed that Florida's average annual homeowner's insurance premium is now more than $2,000 a year. And of course, it's going to be much more if you're near the water. Watch out for steep condo expenses. Certainly a warning that many association fees could be well over $1,000 per month. Make sure that the homeowners association can afford to maintain the property and will not have to make large assessments once you are a homeowner. And to avoid large home maintenance expenses, make sure that you are not buying a home constructed with, for example, defective drywall that was imported from China during 2001 to 2009. This is a very hazardous material that was put into as many as 100,000 homes. You also have to look at, you know, quality of medical care. There have been many people that have moved and they don't have the same care that they had back at their former residence. That has forced people to make alternative decisions when it comes to medical care. Or quality of elder care and social services. Sometimes they're going to lack those particular areas of need in an area that you might move to. Make sure that you have a proper culture fit. You may move to an area that you really have nothing in common with the people around you. Or they say consider the proximity of family. As you get older, it might have some issues, health issues in particular. If your family's not around, that certainly could cause some issues and problems also. Basically, what they were stating is that if you're going to look to move to another area, make sure that you do a little bit of homework and research before you move, because you have to look at all of the taxes, the expenses, the fees, the what the state has to offer, what the area has to offer, how's the health care, what about the things that you like to do, are they nearby? Just there's a lot to consider. I've noticed with a lot of my clients what they try to do is it seems that once they go into retirement, they'll vacation, usually during the wintertime, to some of these warmer destinations like Florida, maybe Arizona, New Mexico, even along the south, certainly in Louisiana or Mississippi. And they'll try different places and see how they like them and see how they like the area and so forth before they make a permanent decision to actually buy a home or a condo or build or do something along those lines. Certainly by experimenting and renting and seeing what the areas are like give you more of a realistic view of things, and you can find out more and see if the people around there are people that you like, have something in common. A lot goes into it. It's not just a decision, oh, I'd like to move to Florida, and boom, off you go. There's a lot more to it than that. So have a little bit of caution, a little bit of study before you do anything along those lines, and it certainly, I think, can save you. Next, since we're into tax season here, this is an article that came from Yahoo Finance. The average tax refund is more than $3,000. And when you hear that number and do your taxes, only to find out that your refund is much less or worse, that you owe money, it can be tempting to fudge the numbers and increase your refund. By misrepresenting your income on your return counts as tax fraud and has some serious consequences. Below, they say in the article, find out what happens if you lie on your taxes and what the IRS penalties you could face. Number one is that you can get audited. Before the IRS gets all of the 1099s and W-2s that you receive, they know if you do not report all of your income. Even if you accept unreported payments in cash or check, your financial activity can reveal red flags about what income you do not report, potentially triggering an audit. An IRS audit is an extensive review of your taxes and financial records to ensure that you reported everything accurately. though most people have less than a 1% chance of being audited, it's not worth the risk. Undergoing an audit is a time-intensive and costly process that involves providing years of documentation and even in-person interviews. If the IRS audits you, you can and probably should hire a professional to represent you in your interest. While that's a smart idea, it can be pricey and an unexpected cost. While the IRS may only flag one return for audit, they can review any return from the past 6 years. If they find more issues, they can add penalties and fines for every year that they find problems. If you made mistakes for the past several years, you could end up owing thousands for taxes you misrepresented. Tax fraud also carries heavy penalties and fees. If the IRS does select you for an audit and they find errors, the penalties and fines can be steep. What they, according to Joshua Zimmerman, who's president of Westwood Tax Consulting, fudging your taxes to reduce your tax bill or boost your refund can cost you more in the long run. If you don't pay your tax liability by the due date, the IRS will charge you a late payment penalty. Even if you file on time, you may still be charged a late penalty if you underreport your income and the IRS finds out. And the penalty is just the start. The IRS can also charge you interest on the underpayment as well. If you're found guilty of tax evasion or tax fraud, you can wind up having to pay some serious fines. While tax evasion or tax fraud is normally imagined as something that affects high earners and big executives, even those with lower incomes need to be careful. When describing the penalties for tax fraud, the IRS does not differentiate between income amounts or how much you underpaid your taxes. If you falsely put information on your return, they can fine you up to $250,000. Besides potentially owing thousands in IRS penalties and fees and interest, you could also face criminal charges. Tax fraud is a felony, and it's punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Failing to report foreign banks and financial accounts might result in up to 10 years in prison. Criminal investigations and charges start when IRS auditors detect possible fraud during their audit of your returns. Courts convict approximately 3,000 people every year of tax fraud, signaling how serious the IRS takes lying on your taxes. The odds of the IRS charging you for fraud is relatively small. If you're investigated, the chances are less than 20% that you'll face a criminal charge. But the potential consequences are severe. It's not worth the risk to get a little extra money on your refund. So be careful out there. Make sure that your taxes are done the correct way. Now it's time to get on the phone lines for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week, 330-370-1590. That's 330-370-1590. For being our contestant, you win breakfast at Bob Evans. And all I'm going to have you do is answer three multiple choice questions. If you get all three right, we move you into the bonus round. One additional question. If you get that right, you'll get a second breakfast card at Bob Evans. 330-370-1590. We're going to take caller number four, and we'll be right back after these commercial breaks.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590 with more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week, and it looks like we have Scott from Talmadge. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Richard. How are you doing this bright, sunny day?
Oh, it's nice to see the sun, isn't it?
Wow, it's beautiful.
You know, even when it's cold and snowy, you know, a little bit of sun out there just makes you feel so much better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Well, anyway, let's go ahead and get to the questions, Scott. My first one for you. Who tried to corner the markets in silver in the early 1980s? Was that the Koch brothers, the Hunt brothers or the Hines brothers? Who tried to corner the market in silver in the early 1980s? The Koch brothers, the Hunt brothers, or the Hines brothers?
I think the Hines brothers.
Actually, I was looking for the Hunt brothers.
Oh, man.
Yeah, back in
starts with an H.
Yeah, absolutely. they tried to corner the market, drove up the price of silver, and boy, they ended up getting hurt by that. But it was the Hunt brothers back in the early 1980s. My next question is, an ETF, which is an exchange-traded fund, A, settles its price once a day at 4 o'clock, B, is very tax-efficient, or C, has higher internal fees compared to a no-load mutual fund? Scott, an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, A, settles its price once a day at 4 o'clock, B, is very tax-efficient, or C, has higher internal fees compared to a no-load mutual fund?
I'm going to guess A.
Settles its price once a day at 4 o'clock.
Yes.
Actually, that's what a mutual fund does. They get a price once a day, and it doesn't matter when you put in the buy or sell order. You don't know what it's going to be until 4 o'clock. That's one of the advantages of an exchange-traded fund is that it trades like a stock throughout the day. The answer I was looking for was B. It is very tax-efficient because you're not really going to realize any type of substantial tax liability until you actually sell the holding. And so they can become very tax efficient when they're used in a regular brokerage account.
Oh, well, I learned something new.
There you go. My last question for you is, which kind of bond loses the most value when interest rates rise? Would that be a 10-year bond, a 20-year bond, or a 30-year bond? Which kind of bond loses the most value when interest rates rise? A 10-year, 20-year, or 30-year bond?
Well, they're all going to lose.
Correct.
I'm going to say a 30-year bond.
Oh, absolutely correct.
Hey, I got one.
There you go. this is referred to as duration. The longer the duration, the bigger the movements. Now, it works in both directions. When interest rates rise, a 30-year bond will lose the most amount of value. But when interest rates fall, a 30-year bond will have the greatest price appreciation. So it's duration. The longer it is, the more it's going to be affected. Hey, got one right. There you go.
I did. I didn't go down in flames completely.
Not bad. Yeah, these weren't the easiest questions either this week, so don't feel too bad. Again, the main purpose is just kind of to learn something, and you still got one out of three right.
Oh, I always learn. That's for sure on your show.
I'm glad to hear that. Very glad to hear that. And for that, for being our contestant, we're going to send you out your card for breakfast at Bob Evans. And I hope you enjoy your weekend, Scott.
Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Real nice of you, Richard.
Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend. And lastly, it's always interesting to see sometimes how the government operates. As you know, the government is probably the least efficient use of tax dollars and how to spend money. And it's the same when it comes to producing our own money. For example, the penny. How much does it cost to produce a penny? Well, it cost 1.5 cents last year. That's up from the 1.43 cents it cost in 2015, but it is down from the 1.66 cents that it cost in 2014. So it cost 1.5 cents to make a penny. Certainly, that's not a good way to get rich, is it? Nickels are the same thing. In 2016, it cost 6.32 cents to make every nickel. Well, at least that's less than the 7.44 cents in 2015, and the 8.09 cents it cost in 2014. But at least they're a little more cost effective. Dimes only cost 3.08 cents to make. And quarters, America the Beautiful quarters, well, they cost 7.63 cents to make. Part of that, of course, has to do with the cost of the ingredients. Jefferson nickel, for example, is 75% copper and 25% nickel. And dimes and quarters are made from the outer layers of 75% copper and 25% nickel alloy bonded to a core of pure copper. So as you can see, basically, it's a little expensive. That's why they've talked about getting rid of the penny altogether. I'll have to share a little personal story on the way in the mornings when I do the radio show on Saturdays. I stop at McDonald's and I get a little breakfast sandwich to start my day. Right now, the price has gone up. It's $1.29. I give the guy $1.30. Do you know he doesn't even bother giving me my penny back? It was just like, that's just the cost of doing business. Not that I really need that penny, but there's been a lot of talk about eliminating the penny, and you know, there's some pros and cons to do that. Certainly when you look at the cost, save the government some money. But, you know, I don't know. Nickels, they still need to get the cost of those down because it costs more than what they're worth. But interesting, real interesting when you look at what the costs are and how they do it. Anyway, another show has come to an end. It has been a great pleasure to share the past hour with you. We always welcome the opportunity at Capital Financial Group to work with you as your personal financial advisor. We can help you set up that financial plan. We do understand what goes on in the investment world, how the products work, what their internal fees are. We do understand things like standard deviation, beta, alpha, and so forth. We know what to buy, when to buy, and how to structure a portfolio that works for you and your individual household. Let us help you to eliminate the worry that comes with investing, retiring, and setting up your portfolio that's supposed to last you during your retirement. Give us a call. Our number is 330-668-6991. That's 330-668-6991. Give us a call and set up an initial consultation. There's no fee to do so. 330-668-6991. Thanks so much for having us in today, and we'll see you next Saturday at 7 right here on Money Talks. Have yourself a great week.
Has been Money Talks with Richard Peterson, President of Capital Financial Group. This program is informational only and should not replace a financial consultation before investing your money. Registered financial advisors are key toward a balanced and responsible financial policy. This has been a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its parent company, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.